106.6. Okay, that was Portishead with All Mine. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has recently had a revamp, so please do take a look. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. Now, the first hour in the show is all about films, and start off with a review. In fact, The Hitman Returneth in British Killer Kill List. British Killer? British Thriller Kill List on Blu-ray. Get me killers and me thrillers mixed up. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then we have new cinema releases, including Haywire and Underworld Awakening. New DVD releases, including The Guard and Killer Elite. And also some film news, if we've got time for it, but it's quite a packed show. So we start off with a review of Kill List on Blu-ray. Now, Kill List gets off to a powerful start with a domestic row between ex-soldier Jay, Neil Maskell, and Shell, Mayanna Buring, about, well, what do married couples usually argue about? Money. The problem is that he's been out of work for the past 8 months and has no job prospects other than when he's given the chance by his best friend Gal, Michael Smiley, to get back in the saddle, living the perilous life of a hitman with a new assignment. With their target in hand, they hole up in a hotel, pretending to a hotel receptionist that they're in sales and prepared to stake him out. Kill List is a film that's very hard to describe because there's not a lot you can say without giving spoilers, other than there's more than one task for them to carry out. They're on the road a lot with these jobs. There's a bizarre connection with the hits that we see take place, and that at another point in the film we see a dinner party take place at Jay and Shell's house with Gal bringing his new girlfriend Fiona, Emma Fryer. Along the way, Jay goes distinctly off message, thanks to his previous arrangement in Kiev, leaving him emotionally scarred, as he dishes out some particularly grotesque violence that earns the film its 18 certificate, and comes across as particularly explicit the first time you see it, before you rewind it and see how things were done. To add to this, it was so violent towards the end, with the final scene being so grotesque, that I just sat open-mouthed for a couple of minutes, and as a result, it's quite powerful stuff there, even if the film itself does need a bit of work to stop it dragging from time to time. There's also some intriguing filming techniques to the film, with sort of three or four quick cuts in some scenes to mark the passing of time, while others do this while playing dialogue from the next scene over the top of it. Oh, and don't worry, I'm not referring to censorship. You'll see what I mean when you watch it, though. Kill List has some fantastic acting, especially from all the leads. Mayanna Buring is normally quite hot in most productions, but here she's intentionally playing a dowdy put-upon wife. And while you may not recognise the name Michael Smiley, you'll have seen him in a million things before this. As an aside, there are not one, not two, but three connections with the sadly cancelled BBC Three comedy Ideal. There are two members of the cast, as well as Emma Fryer, there's also Ben Crompton. I'm on probation! As a guest at one of the hotels in which Jay and Gal stay. Plus, the director is Ben Wheatley, who also directed a number of episodes from the series, including, from Series 5, two of my all-time favourites, The Temptation and The Red Bag, during which Alan makes his escape from Fist's flat, only to end up over at Blind Carol's, who ends up accidentally killing him. Presented in the original 2.35:1 theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the picture is striking throughout with no flaws whatsoever. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 5.1 HD Master Audio and does all the necessary perfectly well, whether it's gunshots, atmosphere or dialogue. There's not a great deal else to say other than while it's not a demo disc, it has no issues whatsoever with what it needs to get across. The extras are as follows. We've got a making of Kill List, which show spookily lit camera tests showing a lot of on-set footage during the filming of the movie. There's interviews, there's three, one with Ben Wheatley, about 6.5 minutes long, one with Neil Maskell and Mayanna Buring, which is about just over 10 minutes, and one with producers Claire Jones and Andrew Stark, that's nearly 8 minutes long. There are brief Q&As. These are brief Q&As where Ben is asked about the film structure, and he talks about how there are twists and turns and how the audience are asked to think. And he says, tongue-in-cheek, I think thinking is quite a good thing and should be encouraged. The audio commentaries, there's one with director Ben Wheatley and writer Amy Jump, and one with Neil Maskell, Mayanna Buring and Michael Smiley. There's also a trailer which is dialogue-free and doesn't give too much away. So for Kill List, the film will give 7 out of 10. Pictures, good 10 out of 10. Sound, 8. Extras, pretty comparatively measly, only four. But overall, still a good 7 out of 10, so a definite rental either way, even if you don't buy it. Okay, so we'll have a bit of music first, and then in a minute we'll be having a look at the top 10 movie charts. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, and you're live on Manchester's 106.6. In this section, we have a look at the top 10 movie charts. I'm going to go through the US movie charts here because I can never find a reliable source for the UK ones, especially on the Internet Movie Database. And to be honest, they are a bit more interesting because you get a flavour of what's coming up. So number one, it's a new entry. We've got The Devil Inside, which has taken $33.7 million in its first week. And basically on there, well, the plot is on October 30th, 1989, Maria Rossi, Susan Crowley, committed a triple murder during an exorcism performed on her. The Catholic Church became involved, and she has since been in a Catholic psychiatric hospital in Rome. The film shows a news story and police investigation showing, in graphic detail, the three members of the clergy whom she murdered. Her daughter, Isabella, learned of the murders from her father, who died 3 days after telling her. 20 years later, Isabella, Fernanda Andrade, is in the process of filming a documentary about exorcisms and to find out more about her mother. She visits a school in Rome that deals with exorcisms and enters a classroom where students, priests and scientists are having a discussion about whether or not a subject is possessed by a demon or just has a mental condition. She has dinner with a few students and ends up getting a little closer with two priests, Ben, Simon Quarterman, and David, Evan Helmuth. They talk more about the differences between being possessed and mental illnesses and inform Isabella that they can't explain the differences. It's just something you just know. On that note, Ben and David are operating outside the church and performing exorcisms to help patients. They take Isabella with them on an exorcism. I did lots of exorcisms in this review, in this bit. They take her to an exorcism performed on Rosalita, Bonnie Morgan, in the basement of a family home. They bring along medical equipment to analyse and determine if it's possession or mental illness. Rosalita attacks the crew after spouting out obscene remarks in different languages and accents. She calls Isabella by name, despite not knowing her. Eventually, they get her under control and stabilised, though her fate is unknown. Now, watching the trailer, there's no one famous in it, but it looks such a cool film with lots of weird stuff going on, including Maria, literally, climbing the walls. It's just totally bizarre. It only scores 3.8 out of 10 on the Internet Movie Database, though. Either way, whether it's going to be any good or not, it's going to be out in the UK on March the 2nd. Number 2, we've got Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. And a terrorist bombing destroys the Kremlin while IMF agent Ethan Hunt is carrying out an undercover operation in Moscow. The Russian government categorises the attack as an undeclared act of war, prompting the United States government to initiate a black operation known as Ghost Protocol, disavowing the entire Impossible Mission Force. And Hunt and his four-person team are allowed to escape from the government's custody as part of a plan to enable them to operate outside of their agency's command structure. However, when the IMF is ambushed, they're forced to operate without any kind of official support in an attempt to locate an intelligence source connected to the Moscow bombing and the attack on the IMF. Starring Tom Cruise, as always, plus Jeremy Renner, Simon Pegg, Michael Nyquist and Ving Rhames in an uncredited performance, the trailer makes it look amazing, but on the other hand, Cruise has long hair again. And as the previous films in the series, only the second one featured him with long hair, and that was the only rubbish one. While number 1 and 3 were brilliant. Number 3, we've got Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. Now, Sherlock Holmes, Robert Downey Jr., has always been the smartest man in the room, until now. There was a new criminal mastermind at large, Professor James Moriarty, Jared Harris. And not only is he Holmes' intellectual equal, but his capacity for evil, coupled with a complete lack of conscience, may actually give him an advantage over the renowned detective. When the Crown Prince of Austria is found dead, the evidence, as construed by Inspector Lestrade, Eddie Marsden, points to suicide. But Sherlock Holmes deduces that the prince has been a victim of murder, a murder that is only one piece of a larger and much more portentous puzzle designed by one Professor Moriarty. Mixing business with pleasure, Holmes tracks the clues to an underground gentleman's club, where he and his brother Mycroft Holmes, Stephen Fry, are toasting Dr. Watson, Jude Law, on his last night of bachelorhood. It is there that Holmes encounters Sim, Noomi Rapace, a gypsy fortune teller who sees more than she is telling, and whose unwitting involvement in the prince's murder makes her the killer's next target. Holmes barely manages to save her life, and in return, she reluctantly agrees to help him. The investigation becomes ever more dangerous as it leads Holmes, Watson and Sim across the continent, from England to France to Germany and finally to Switzerland. But the cunning Moriarty is always one step ahead as he spins a web of death and destruction. All part of a greater plan that, if he succeeds, will change the course of history. Now, I doubt I'm going to go and see this. The first one was a massive disappointment, apart from the fantastic oldie-worldy London backdrops. I might give Guy Ritchie a second chance, but I'll most likely wait until it comes out on Blu-ray, and then only look out for it if there's not much else around at that time. Number 4, got The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And this is the second film to be adapted from the Swedish novel of the same name by Stieg Larsson. The first film was the original Swedish language adaptation from 2009. And this is the American remake, written by Steven Zalian and directed by David Fincher. Daniel Craig stars as Mikael Blomqvist, with Rooney Mara starring as Lisbeth Salander. In essence, the film follows a man's mission to find out what has happened to the girl who has been missing for 36 years and may have been murdered. The fast-paced trailer doesn't give much away as there's no dialogue in it, and I've not yet seen any of the original trilogy. I'd be in more of a mind to go and watch those instead. If you have seen them, let me know what you think on the Facebook page. As I say, all the trailers you see, you hear about on this show, they'll all be on the trailers for all the films, will all be on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Number 5, we've got Alvin and the Chipmunks with Chipwrecked. I saw the trailer and I just thought, avoid it completely. And then we've got number 6, we've got War Horse, and, oh, what can I say? It stars newcomer Jeremy Irvine as Albert Narracott, plus Peter Mullen, Emily Watson, David Thewlis, Benedict Cumberbatch and Toby Kebbell. Now, I've seen clips of this, so I know it's going to head the bill at the Oscars, but it's the kind of film that really doesn't interest me, partly because it's one of those films where they tell you that you must see it. And the subject matter does nothing for me either. In fact, there's a trailer doing the rounds for The Artist, which is another film that'll win big at the Oscars, and just really doesn't interest me. But it's one of those trailers where it's full of people saying, oh, I loved it, you know, oh, give me, I want to go see it again, I've got to go see it again right now. And I feel like saying, shut up, you've only got in because, you're only saying these things because they gave you a free screening. I had a pretty much near a free screening for Strictly Ballroom years ago. When did it come out? 92, I think, without looking it up. And it was part of a thing where the several showcases around the country, including the Manchester showcase where I went to, you had to pay to go and see it. But if you genuinely didn't like it, you could get your money back. You just had to tell them at the box office that you didn't like it when it finished, and they'd give you your money back. And me and my mate, we hated it, and we went and got our money back. You know, so it was like £3 or £4 at the time. It's a lot more now, obviously. But it's just, the film just sucked. You know, it's just, it was utter balls. Like pretty much everything Baz Luhrmann does, apart from that sunscreen song. So would I have gone back? Would I have got the money if I'd really enjoyed it? Probably not, actually. I would have just, you know, paid me money and I'd made my choice. But yeah, it sucked and I got my money back. Anyway, I've gone right off the point there. So War Horse, not good. The Artist, and what was the other one? Yeah, Strictly Ballroom. Oh. Well, if you're going to see that, you've seen that by now because it came out 20 years ago. Anyway, slightly digressing. Number 7, we've got We Bought a Zoo. And I went into detail about this last time, and so I'm not going to go into detail about it again because the film's out in the UK on March the 16th, and it stars Matt Damon and Scarlett Johansson. And also comes from Cameron Crowe, the director of Jerry Maguire, which I really enjoyed. But based on the trailer, it starts off okay with a bit of humour, but soon falls apart into schmaltzy rubbish. So, yeah, give it a miss. Number 8, we've got The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn. This came out in the UK in October and completely passed me by. The trailer didn't do a lot for me either to encourage me to see it, and no doubt it's going to be out on DVD and Blu-ray soon. Number 9, we've got Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Number 10, The Darkest Hour. And The Darkest Hour is an American sci-fi film directed by Chris Gorak and produced by Tibor Bekmambetov. The American-based production depicts an alien invasion in Russia and stars Emil Hirsch, Max Minghella, Olivia Thirlby and Rachel Taylor as young people caught in the invasion. In Moscow, 5 young people, each with different goals, must work together to survive after an alien race has invaded Earth. The baddies suck up all of the energy in the world, causing electricity supplies to drop to zero, and there's a stack of cool CGI and clever aspects to it. So, you know, on show here, which to me make it, you know, look like the first must-see film of 2012. Okay, that's your top 10 films for this week. I'll have a bit of music first, and then we'll have a look at the new cinema releases for all the films out this Friday. You're listening to 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, we're back with the DVD Fever Show. And in this section, we have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Haywire. This dynamic action thriller, directed by Oscar winner Steven Soderbergh, boasts a talented cast that includes Channing Tatum from G.I. Joe Rise of the Cobra, Ewan McGregor, the ghostwriter, Michael Fassbender, X-Men First Class, Antonio Banderas, Bill Paxton, Michael Douglas, Michael Angaro from Almost Famous, and introduces mixed martial arts superstar Gina Carano as Mallory Kane in a demanding lead role that has her performing her own high adrenaline stunts. Mallory Kane is a highly trained operative who works for a government security contractor in the dirtiest, most dangerous corners of the world. After successfully freeing a Chinese journalist held hostage, she is double-crossed and left for dead by someone close to her in her own agency. Suddenly the target of skilled assassins who know her every move, Mallory must find the truth in order to stay alive. Using her black ops military training, she devises an ingenious and dangerous trap. But when things go haywire, Mallory realises she'll be killed in the blink of an eye unless she finds a way to turn the tables on a ruthless adversary. Now, watching the trailer, Gina Carano looks damn hot as Mallory Kane, and overall it looks like a solid action movie, so definitely worth a look. Also out this Friday, we've got Underworld Awakening. Oh, by the way, all the trailers for everything you hear on this show today, are all on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Now, Underworld Awakening is the second sequel in the Underworld series, with Underworld Rise of the Lycans being the prequel to the first Underworld, and Underworld Evolution being the first sequel. Got all that? Good. Kate Beckinsale, star of the first two films, returns in a lead role as a vampire warrioress Selene, who escapes imprisonment to find herself in a world where humans have discovered the existence of both the vampire and the Lycan clans, and are conducting an all-out war to eradicate both immortal species. 6 months after the events of Underworld Evolution, Selene was captured by humans. Eventually, both government officials and the public learn about the existence of the two immortal species of vampires and Lycans. Another crusade and all-out war has begun. After being imprisoned in cryogenic suspension for 12 years, Selene manages to escape the facility. The trailer has explosions, action and shouting. While I haven't seen the third film, which featured Rhona Mitra instead of Kate Beckinsale, the first two were entertaining pieces of nonsense which didn't stretch the intelligence. This looks like it'll be more of the same, basically, so worth a watch if there's nothing else on the big screen that you fancy. Also out this week, we've got Coriolanus.
He said anus.
The citizens of Rome are hungry. Coriolanus, the hero of Rome, a great soldier and man of inflexible self-belief. I don't know why I'm chipping my words over them. Just wait until what's coming next. Right, Coriolanus, the hero of Rome, a great soldier and a man of inflexible self-belief, despises the people. His extreme views ignite a mass riot. Rome is bloody, manipulated and outmaneuvered by politicians and even his own mother, Volumnia. Coriolanus is banished from Rome. He offers his life or his services to his sworn enemy, Tullus Aufidius. Coriolanus and Aufidius march on Rome intending to destroy the city. Volumnia appeals to her son. He tries to reject her, but eventually breaks. Aufidius, feeling bitterly betrayed, brutally murders Coriolanus. Did you understand any of that? The trailer shows a lot of shouting, and the film features Ralph Fiennes, who also directs it, plus Gerard Butler, Vanessa Redgrave, Brian Cox, Jessica Chastain, and James Nesbitt. But there's never been anything from the publicity which has grabbed me about this film, so it won't be one I'll be seeing, you know. But that's Coriolanus, so, you know, it's the film with a rude word in it. Anyway, also out this Friday, we've got The Sitter. Now, Noah, Jonah Hill, is a college student who has been suspended and now lives with his mum. After a disagreement with his mother, he's lured into taking a babysitting job caring for the kids of Mrs. Perdula. The stern and studious Slater, Max Records, a stupid name. No-nonsense wild child, Blythe, Landry Bender, even more stupid name. And this pyromaniac exchange student, Rodrigo, Kevin Hernandez. Soon, Noah is invited to a party to have sex with his girlfriend, Ari Grainor, another stupid name, and he soon becomes entangled with two psychopathic drug dealers in a wild chase through Manhattan. Well, I was expecting nothing from this knockabout comedy, but the trailer hits the right mark at every turn with great comic timing. Looks well worth a watch when it comes out over here. Of course it's over here this Friday. So with that, dear, put me brain in. It's well worth a watch when it comes out this Friday. Also out is J. Edgar. Now, J. Edgar is a 2011 biographical drama film directed by Clint Eastwood from a script by Dustin Lance Black. The film focuses on the career of FBI director J. Edgar Hoover from the Palmer raids onwards, including an examination of his private life as well as an alleged closeted and chaste homosexual. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio in the lead role, Armie Hammer, Naomi Watts, Damon Herriman, Ed Westwick and Jeffrey Donovan. As the face of law enforcement in America for almost 50 years, J. Edgar Hoover was feared and admired, reviled and revered, but behind closed doors, he held secrets that would have destroyed his image, his career and his life. Watching the trailer, I know nothing about J. Edgar Hoover, and I still don't know a lot, but DiCaprio has proved himself a very watchable actor over the years, and Clint Eastwood doesn't often put a foot wrong, so this could be well worth a watch. Okay, so that's your films out this Friday, and in a moment we'll have a look at the DVDs that are out this week. We'll have a bit of music first, and then we'll move on to that. Okay, this is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And this section, the last section of the hour, we'll be having a look at the DVDs and Blu-rays that are out this week. Starting with The Guard. Now, Sergeant Jerry Boyle, Brian Gleeson, is a small-town Irish cop with a confrontational personality, joins forces with a straight-laced FBI agent, Don Cheadle, to take on an international drug smuggling gang in Ireland's Connemara Gaeltacht. The murder, which appears to be the work of an occult serial killer, is the first incident, the relevance of which is then revealed by Boyle in a briefing by an FBI agent sent to liaise with the Gardaí. A web of bribery, blackmail and killings ensues. Boyle and Everett form an unlikely alliance, and with the unwitting help of the IRA, bring about a bloody denouement. The film also stars Liam Cunningham and Mark Strong, and it's a comedy, although from the description it certainly doesn't sound like one. However, the trailer certainly points it in the comedy direction and makes the film worth a look. Also out, we've got Killer Elite. Based on a true story, I'm sure, Killer Elite picks the two of the world's most elite operatives, Danny, an ex-Special Ops agent, Jason Statham, and Hunter, his longtime mentor, Robert De Niro, against the cunning leader of a secret military society, played by Clive Owen. Covering the globe from Australia to Paris, London and the Middle East, Danny and Hunter are plunged into a highly dangerous game of cat and mouse, where the predators become the prey. The trailer is full of explosions and a rock soundtrack, showing us that it's Jason Statham versus Clive Owen and Robert De Niro. And it looks like it certainly fills the criteria for an action blockbuster. So this is a film I definitely want to see. Also out this week, we've got the Doctor Who Christmas special, The Doctor, the Widow and the Wardrobe. Now, evacuated to a house in Dorset from war-torn London, Madge Arwell and her two children, Lily and Cyril, are greeted by a madcap caretaker. Get me words out. Whose mysterious Christmas gift leads them into a magical wintry world. Special features include a prequel, there's also three lots of the best of Doctor Who 45-minute features, commissioned by BBC America and only seen in the US, showcasing the favourite moments of all the series that feature Matt Smith as a Doctor, such as featuring the best of the Doctor, best of the monsters and best of the companions. Well, there's not been a great deal so far, has there? Sorry, Matt Smith, Claire Skinner, Morris Cole, Holly Earle, Alexander Armstrong, Sarah and Sam Stockman, the first thing we saw was the Doctor heading for Earth, but flying on his own through space away from an exploding spacecraft and grabbing the foot of an astronaut. Excuse me. Always with the astronauts. When he crashes to the ground, he's wearing the astronaut's suit with a helmet on back to front, claiming, "I got dressed in a hurry." And there's no way Alexander Armstrong would fly during World War II. He's far too old. Now, the lad Cyril goes through a toy box in the bedroom into a magical forest where time moves differently across the dimensional planes. A bit like that episode with an ageing Karen Gillan. Either way, the Doctor and Cyril's sister Lily have to go and find him. Then Claire Skinner walked through into the forest and was approached by three people in suits. Bill Bailey, Arabella Weir and someone else. And yes, Arabella's bum did look big in this. Cyril gets captured by some wooden weirdos and channel their voices through him to talk to the Doctor, saying, "Your coming was foretold." Then Bill Bailey et al. Came to save the day with Claire Skinner in a big AT-AT Empire Strikes Back style machine. And unsurprisingly, it was all okay in the end. Her husband wasn't dead and everything works out fine. In the end, after Claire Skinner said something about how he must have to get back to his family, he said he said that he has friends, but they must think he's dead. And in the end, he went back to see Amy and Rory. I must have tripped over my words, because quite frankly, overall, this was a very dull episode, as usual for a Christmas one, where very little happened within. The series that's due out this year, normally we get some in, last time we got some in Easter and some in, and some in the autumn. It's all going to be in the autumn this time. So you'll have a long wait for the next episode. Excuse me. Also out this week, we've got Hidden, a taut and gripping four-part conspiracy thriller. Hidden is written by Ronan Bennett, Public Enemies and the Hamburg Cell, in collaboration with veteran Hollywood screenwriter Walter Bernstein, The Magnificent Seven and Failsafe. Directed by Niall McCormick, the thriller is set across London and Paris at a time when Britain is in a state of political turmoil. There is rioting on the streets, and the coalition government has collapsed. The drama centres on Harry Venn, Phil Glenister, a high street solicitor who is forced to delve back into his murky past. When a mysterious lawyer, Gina Hawkes, played by Thecla Rooten from The American and in Bruges, turns up asking Harry to find a missing alibi witness for a client. He agrees to take on the job but becomes unwittingly drawn into investigating the death of his brother 20 years ago. Harry quickly finds himself caught up in a much bigger and more complex conspiracy. The cast includes Harry Venn, played by Philip Glenister, Gina Hawkes, played by Thecla Rooten, as I say, plus Sir Nigel Fountain, played by David Suchet, Elizabeth Verney, played by Anna Chancellor, Paul Hillman, played by Mark Flitton, also Thomas Craig, Richard Dormer, Paul Ritter, and Bertie Carvel. Now, I saw this when it was broadcast and reviewed it on here too, and it was very complex and did tie itself in knots occasionally. But overall, the gravitas of Glenister and the sultriness of Thecla Rooten really pulled it through. Also out this week, we've got The Whistleblower. Now, inspired by actual events, hard-up Nebraska police officer, Catherine Bulkovach, Academy Award winner Rachel Weisz, accepts a well-paying UN peacekeeping job, courtesy of a private military contractor working on behalf of the UN. She arrives in a post-war Bosnia expecting a harmonised international effort, but instead finds chaos and disorder amongst a backdrop of simmering ethnic tensions. When a brutally injured young woman lands in the UN's care, Catherine risks her own safety as she unearths an organised and brutal underworld of sex trafficking. Despite attempts to thwart her investigation and threats on her life, she fights to uncover the truth and traces the path of criminality to a shocking source. Now, the trailer makes this look like a reasonably interesting story beefed up with lots of Hollywood silliness and chases. So perhaps this kind of thing would be better done as a foreign movie. I've never been a fan of Rachel Weisz, so I wouldn't rush to see this, although there are good supporting cast members, such as David Strathairn, Monica Bellucci, and Vanessa Redgrave. Also out this week, we've got Alien Anthology. So all four films out on Blu-ray. Now, Alien, in the first chapter of the terrifying Alien saga, the crew of the spaceship Nostromo answers a distress signal from a desolate planet, only to discover a deadly life form that breeds within human hosts. Now the crew members must fight not only for their own survival, but the survival for all mankind. The second film, the terror continues as Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, returns to Earth after drifting through space in hypersleep for 57 years. Although a story about her alien encounter is met with scepticism, she agrees to accompany a team of high-tech marines back to LV-246. And this time it's war. Alien 3, in the third chapter of the terrifying sci-fi saga, Ripley's crippled spaceship crash lands on Fiorina 161, a bleak wasteland inhabited by former inmates of the planet's maximum security prison. But an alien was aboard her craft, again. And soon the body count begins to mount. Number 4, Alien Resurrection. Terror is reborn in the stunning conclusion to the Alien sci-fi saga. 200 years have passed since Ripley made the ultimate sacrifice on Fiorina 161, and now a group of scientists have cloned her, along with the alien queen inside her, hoping to breed the ultimate weapon. Now, I'm not sure what extras are actually on that particular package, but it's showing on Amazon at $13.99, whereas I looked for the one that came out a while ago that was like a box set with everything in it, with like tons and tons of extras, all on Blu-ray, and that's only $14.99, so double check the boxes. If you can find it for £1 more with all the extras, just get that, quite frankly. Well, there's not a lot else out this week. We've got just the films. We've got some films called The Interrupters, Powder and Violent Playground, some TV series and other stuff. We've got Boone Series 6, Footballer's Wives Series 5, For the Love of Ada Series 4, Hairy Bikers Mum Knows Best Series 2, Midsummer Murders Series 14 with Neil Dudgeon. There's three episodes of that. The Sacred Trust, The Sleeper Under the Hill, and The Night of the Stag. Second Thought Series 4, Waterloo Road Series 6, and Without You, that dire thing with Anna Friel that was on just before Christmas. Blu-ray premieres, there's none out this week at all, bit of a shame. But anyway, coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with a review of Lara Croft and The Guardian of Light on the Xbox 360. But to take us to the top of the hour, we're going to have a song from one of my favourite films, The Breakfast Club. And if you've not heard this, it's an absolute treat. It's Wang Chung and Fire in the Twilight. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was David Bowie with Golden Years. And that's for Lorraine Johnson of Stockport, who has a special birthday coming up soon. But I'm not saying which one. I hope you enjoyed the song anyway. And Bowie himself turned 65 a week last Sunday, so I hope he enjoyed getting his bus pass then. Although he might have had to wait until the Monday, because the shops would all be shut on Sundays. Anyway, you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, listening to Manchester's 106.6. And this second hour, we start off with some video games. We have a look at, got a review of Lara Croft in The Guardian of Light on the Xbox 360. We have the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, and some video games news. We also have some TV stuff in the second half of the hour, with a look back at How to Be a Good Mother with Sharon Horgan, and My Daughter, the Teenage Nudist. There'll be a look ahead to some more programmes coming up, and also some TV news. First of all, we'll have a review of Lara Croft. Now, Lara Croft is back, but not as Tomb Raider. Confused? You won't be after this episode of Soap. Hang on. Let's get back to the present. This isn't a sitcom. It's actually the first in a new game series which aims to continue the Lara Croft franchise, but not under the usual Tomb Raider branding. That's not the first notice you'll immediately first difference you'll immediately spot, though. The thing is that this game has an isometric 3D look to it, which is something no previous title has ever done, those all going for a third-person view behind Lara. As such, I'm initially expecting to be able to turn and swing around with the right joystick and change the viewpoint, but I can't, as it only does it in terms of turning Lara around with the viewpoint remaining the same isometric stance. So, a bit bizarre, but let's work with it and, you know, see what happens. Lara Croft in The Guardian of Light also features cooperative gameplay, either online or at home, and since you can't have two Laras on screen at once, despite many a bloke rather liking this thought, the other character is Totec, an ancient 2,000-year-old Maya warrior and leader of the Army of Light. You're up against an evil spirit called Zlotl, the god with associations to both lightning and death, also the twin of Quetzalcoatl, who once had his own ZX Spectrum game back in the 80s. But I digress. Zlotl, I'll never be able to pronounce his name, as a baddie will naturally send scores of minions your way to make your life a misery, including giant spiders, demon-like creatures and huge trolls. As usual, Lara is voiced by Ashes to Ashes star Keely Hawes, and Totex by Jim Cummings, an actor from Ohio, whose work includes Robot Chicken, Star Wars The Clone Wars, and the game Mass Effect 2. The basic plot is that Totec and Zlotl had a bit of a beef 2,000 years ago. Although if that's strictly true, then Totec must have had a baby. That said, he could have had the wherewithal of Stewie Griffin, in which case anything is possible. Either way, Totec won that battle, banished Zlotl, and then entombed himself in the Temple of Light along with the magical Mirror of Smoke, to stop any wrongdoers getting their mitts on it. Speed forward to the present day and Lara finds a temple and mirror, but some baddies follow her and nick it. As such, our ancient pair, now I know Lara's getting on a bit now, but no smutty jokes please, are awoken. Zlotl bumps off these baddies and has it away himself. Assuming that a woman's always to blame, Totex lands a ball of failure squarely in Lara's court until he realises that they'll have to collaborate in order to get everything sorted out by defeating Zlotl again and getting the mirror back. It's a bit like a video game of the Condemned Coalition, actually. Well, actually, it's not at all. I'm talking rubbish. As an aside, this actually reminds me of one game which was years ahead of its time, Ico on the PS2. It doesn't have the same level of charm, though. Some good things with this game. Once you get used to the gameplay, you discover that Lara has very fluid movement. The sound is a particular treat, as while the graphics look a bit simplified, the audio will give your speakers and your ears a treat. I do love the grapple rings as well to, well, grapple onto and swing your pants. And yourself. I also love the big bombs to blow things up, although for dispensers of poison arrows, it does rather seem like a... I also love the big bombs to blow things up, although for dispensers of poison arrows, it does rather seem like a cheating way of doing things. There are some quite well thought out puzzles in the challenge tombs, and there are 14 levels, so plenty of gameplay to be had, although on the downside it is incredibly samey. Also, it only costs a tenner. Some not so good stuff? It's way too linear. It's almost on the rails the way you go through a level and how things have to be done in order. There's no sandbox style to do what you want when you want nature to it. It doesn't have the same kind of style and panache as the regular series, even though it does cost a mere tenner. It's also nice to see that it's trying to something a little different, but overall the gameplay becomes far too repetitive. And while I used to be a die-hard Lara Croft fan, I'm not going to spend every minute scouring every part of every level for every last gem or power-up. Overall, it's better value than the main series, which costs at least four times as much, and looks a lot better, but has exactly the same kind of longevity issues. But if you can get a demo of this first, try that. There's also a co-op mode for two players, excuse me, which is the only way you'll get the chance to play as Totec. I'm more for single-player games, but if doubling up is your bag, then you'll find that the levels are designed to a degree to take advantage of the fact that you need to have both players on screen. In that outing, you'll have to work together in order to stop Zlothal and retrieve the Mirror of Smoke. I'm just glad he's not hanging around in the single-player game as an AI character, with me having to keep him alive as well as dealing with my own problems. Okay, so that's a review of the game. The graphics I give 7 out of 10. Sound 10 out of 10, that was a good one. Gameplay 7, and enjoyment 6. So overall, it's a pretty strong 8. Okay, so that's your review for this week, and in a moment I have a bit of music and then we'll have the top 10 games charts. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, and in this section we'll be having a look at the top 10 games charts plus some new video games releases out this Friday. Okay, so starting off with the charts at number 1, we've got FIFA 12. Number 2, Battlefield 3. Oh, too many sequels going on, of course. Number 3, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number 4, Just Dance 3 Special Edition. Number 5, The Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim. Number 6, Zumba Fitness. Number 7, Need for Speed The Run. Number 8, Saints Row the Third. Number 9, Rage. Number 10, Assassin's Creed Revelations. There's also a couple of re-entries, number 27 for the Wii Fit Plus, and number 36 for Tintin and the Secret of the Unicorn. Video games releases out this Friday. We've got Winter Sports 2012, which gives you the opportunity to experience the thrill and excitement, it says here, of some of the most high-octane, adrenaline-filled events of snow and ice. Everyone knows that winter sports are for the true adrenaline junkies. Nothing can compare to plummeting down on a mountainside at over 120 miles an hour and nothing but a pair of skis or a snowboard. Winter Sports 2012 captures a feeling of raw, stomach-clenching excitement in extensive detail. Crowned with over 50 challenges or spanning 10 winter sports and Olympic events, you have the chance to experience the rush in sub-zero climates while in the comfort of your own home. Or on the go on the Nintendo 3DS. Oh, it's also out for the Wii and the PC, by the way. You can challenge yourself in the single-player mode or go up against four of your friends in split-screen mode. Winter Sports 2012 has extensive replay value with rewards and unlockables, as well as an in-depth character design tool, spectacular slow motion replays, and an emotive soundtrack with a realistic audience panorama, giving you the unique experience of the winter season without having to travel up a mountain, it says here. Also out, we've got King Arthur 2 Limited Edition. That's critically praised by reviewers and gamers alike. King Arthur was received as one of the biggest surprises to emerge on the gaming scene in 2010. Now the fantasy role-playing RTS returns in a sequel set to push the boundaries of the genre even further. Our story begins long after young Arthur pulled the enchanted sword out of the stone, united the war-torn land of Britannia, gathered the Knights of the Round Table and secured peace in Camelot, aided by the might of the Holy Grail. Where legends normally end, King Arthur II begins on its own gruesome tale. In this game, there's a dark fantasy setting where King Arthur is now the maimed king, trying to mend a land torn asunder as he strives to heal himself. There's intense boss fights where the hero forces are pitted against unique and terrifying foes. You can lose yourself in the stunning story that unfolds over a huge 3D campaign map featuring nightly quests and other special events. There's a wide range of camera control options, revised animations and extensive tutorial, creating a more accessible and visually stunning experience. Also experience huge real-time battles featuring thousands of soldiers and flying fantasy monsters. You can battle enemies which employ unique war tactics and cast fantastic spells. Your choices will unlock special content, special spells and units with plenty of new and unique possibilities with every choice. And you can lead major heroes who possess extraordinary powers. There's also exclusive downloadable content for the retail box version. Also this week we've got Skidoo Challenge. The Skidoos are synonymous with snowmobiles. They set the bar for which others aspire to by constantly innovating and delivering consistently snowmobiles that outperform any other. The Skidoo Challenge takes this unique experience onto the PS3 with every minute detail being meticulously captured. It also gives you the rare opportunity to see some of the fastest machines on ice in full HD on the PS3. Every Skidoo feature in the game has been modelled on its real-world counterpart to give an unparalleled level of authenticity. And you can race across four different countries on 25 different tracks, spread across four different disciplines, attempt on your own in single player, or with up to 12 people in multiplayer mode. Now, there's another game. One more game that's out this week. I mean, it's just, I'm spoiling you for just high class, you know, top class games this week. I mean, there's nothing out there, is there? But this week, you've now got the most amazing game to come up. You've been waiting a long time for this. It should have come out before Christmas. It would have beaten, you know, Battlefield 3, Call of Duty, forget it. This one would win. Out on the PC, it's German Truck Simulator. You climb into the driver's cab and turn on the ignition key to fire up a career in heavy haulage. Start as a humble employee and put your driving skills and business acumen to the test as you strive to become king of the road. Can you make on-time deliveries across the length and breadth of Germany? The route to success offers you the opportunity to purchase bigger and better trucks, building your business into a major haulage operation, expanding your fleet and hiring your own team of drivers. Developed by the makers of a chart-topping Euro Truck Simulator and licensed by MAN, German Truck Simulator puts you behind the wheel of authentic 3D recreations of these iconic trucks, featuring highly detailed interiors and exteriors, custom physics modelling, with working gauges and controls. Truck simulation has never been so realistic or so much fun. You haul 60 different freight loads along an extensive road network linking 18 breathtakingly detailed German towns and cities. Deliver on time, but avoid speeding tickets and damaging your precious cargo. Are you up to the challenge of heading out onto the highway? Wow. I think I'll be down Amazon first thing on Friday morning to buy this one. Yeah. Anyway, that's what's out this Friday. And I'll have a bit of music in a moment. And then, for you, just for you, we'll have some video games news. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we'll be having a look at some video games news. Starting with the news that the Nintendo 3DS has seen an improvement following a poor launch, say analysts. Wedbush Morgan's Michael Pachter said that the handheld had turned the corner thanks to a price cut and the release of strong first-party titles. It's very successful, but ran into a headwind given its relatively high price, which I incorrectly thought was the right price, and lack of third-party software support, he told Eurogamer. Now that we're seeing more first-party titles at a lower price point, sales have increased. It's definitely turned the corner. He added, I was surprised that it sold so few at the $250 price point in the US, and its sales today to exactly what I forecasted at that price. EDR's Vice President Jesse Davinich agreed that saying that Nintendo is clear of the woods for now, but strong software must continue to be released. Going forward, however, we will closely be paying attention to the software attach rates. Selling hardware is great, but it's only the first step. The health of any hardware is directly correlated to the amount of software consumers buy. Nintendo 3DS had a strong finish to 2011 in the US, with Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7 selling 1 million copies each, and the device itself outselling the Wii in the same period. Nintendo has outlined its 2012 early 2012 release schedule, with Resident Evil Revelations, Metal Gear Solid, Snake Eater 3D, and Kid Icarus Uprising during the upcoming months. There's also the news that House of the Dead 3 and 4 are to be released exclusively on the PlayStation Network. The light gun shooters will be updated with high definition visuals, trophies and support for PlayStation Move. Released in 2003, House of the Dead 3 was subsequently ported to the PC, Xbox and bundled with House of the Dead 2 for the Wii. Meanwhile, House of the Dead 4 will be playable on a home console for the first time following its arcade debut in 2005. The House of the Dead has always been one of Sega's most popular series, and over the years we've worked hard to bring that full arcade experience to console owners, said Senior President of Digital Business Haruki Satomi. The abilities of the PS3 as well as the PS Move have let us get closer than ever before. The only thing these titles are missing is a need for quarters. House of the Dead 3 will release on February the 7th, and number 4 later this spring. Now, there's also the news that L.A. Noire was too big, creator Brendan McNamara has said. The team Bondi head explained how the small studio's ambition saw development go on for 7 years. One thing is the size. It's a huge game. Probably too big. The map's massive. So that's probably my fault, he told Official PlayStation magazine. We had to build a new process to do that. We were a brand new studio. We had brand new tools, new technology. We have tools that allow you to build cities now. But we had to build that kind of stuff and make it work. Everything from the road network, where all the trolley cars go, all the cables connecting automatically to do all the buildings. To all the buildings, rather. McNamara continued, the tech was pretty expensive, including motion scan. I'd say the first year and a half, maybe even longer, was just research. Newspaper research, guys going over to LA and doing research on the buildings, taking photos and getting all the resources together. We were quite a small studio, 16 people or something. We had to have all this material so we could start building stuff. McNamara recently explained why protagonist Cole Phelps would often provide over-the-top responses in interrogation scenes. And L.A. Noire placed fourth in Digital Spy's games of the 2011 countdown. And the L.A. Noire Complete Collection, which features the original game and all the downloaded content, is out now on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 and PC. Okay, that's your video games news for this week. I have a bit of music in a moment, and then we'll be moving on to everything to do with TV, starting with some reviews of some programmes, including How to Be a Good Mother with Sharon Horgan and My Daughter the Teenage Nudist. Please have to stay tuned for a bit of that. I mean, I'll try and show you what I can of the programme, but you might not be able to see much given that this is radio. Okay, bit of music first, and then we'll be on to that. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And this section, the last half hour of the show, we move on to everything to do with TV, starting with TV programmes watched in the past week. Now, first of all, we're going to start off with Coppers, which is Channel 4's acclaimed documentary series. And the first programme featured plainclothes officers of CID as they've never been seen before. With the budgets cut and morale at an all-time low, police forces across the UK are facing their harshest challenge for decades. Against a backdrop of rising crime and last summer's shocking civil unrest, Coppers returns to lift the lid on what it's really like to police 21st century Britain and its increasingly disorderly population. From the armed response teams on the riot-torn streets of Nottingham to beat bobbies patrolling the quiet country lanes of rural Perthshire, the series hears direct and with incredible candour what officers on the front line really think about the job they do and the people they deal with. Now, this show was pretty flat, to be honest. It was in one eye and out the other TV. I can barely remember what happened other than some disgruntled youths effing and jeffing at the policeman. But I'll probably watch it again if there's nothing else on. I know it's not particularly selling it, but if you watch it, you'll see what I mean. I quite got into the first series, even though it just sort of completely washes over you. I'm not selling it at all. I've watched it anyway. It's worth a watch, you know. That's about it, really. There's also How to Be a Good Mother with Sharon Horgan. Now, being a mother nowadays is tough. Everyone's got an opinion, whether it's about stay-at-home mums versus out-to-work or bottle versus breast. Does anyone really know what they're doing? Award-winning writer and actress Sharon Horgan is also a mother of two girls. Like most mums, she wonders if she's bringing up her kids in the best way. In this film, Sharon meets six mothers who are convinced they're getting it right, even if their methods are unusual or off-the-scale strange. Like the mother who doesn't believe in nappies, or the ex-stunt woman who thinks we've all brainwashed our kids into being scaredy cats, and a mum who is in love with placentas. Sharon is a warm and funny guide to one of the most contentious subjects out there, about how to be a good mother. One thing she said at the very start was, she said there's got to be women out there who feel they know what they're doing without having any guilt. But I mean, first of all, you know, seeing a woman cook a placenta with Sharon Horgan, you know, it's just, if you saw it, you're picturing it in your mind as I am right now. It was just gross beyond belief. It was like looking at a side of beef that was all pretty much raw. And I'm sorry if you have any lunch now, but it was just gross. And then they made it even worse when they turned one into a placenta smoothie. Yummarama. There was another woman who came up with something called elimination communication, where one woman let her baby run around without a nappy and seemed to know when he was about to wee and then took her straight back to the loo at the right time. And then there's another woman who was proud to show that she'd taken a picture of a baby's first poo on a mobile phone. This was full of strange people, this programme. Another programme that's full of strange people is My Daughter the Teenage Nudist, where Molly and Alex are part of a growing group of teens and 20-somethings who are embracing the world of public nudity, a contemporary phenomenon that's been driven by Facebook as well as niche websites like The Naked Tea Party. They are on a quest to normalise nudity, question the media's obsession with the body beautiful, and encourage other people to liberate themselves by simply going naked in the streets, cafes or at art shows. The new nudists are keen to take the nudist lifestyle beyond the old-fashioned naturist clubs. So why is this pastime increasing in popularity? And what do the parents think about their child revealing all in the most public of places? Well, there was nudity, but it wasn't all that much to shout about, quite frankly. There were a number of clothes-optional events, most of which featured fat old people. It made it sound like you're going to see lots of female students getting their kit off, but all we mostly had was 18-year-old Molly and also Alex, who was mid-20s or so, and he was told by a policeman to put a top on when she was giving out leaflets with a man who also had no top on, but he was not told to cover up. She challenged his view of public decency laws, and so the policeman got back on his radio to double-check, but never came back to them, making it, you know, just seem rather a bit of a pointless scene. Overall, it was just an excuse for Channel 4 to show a bit of nudity and, if you'll pardon the pun, dress it up as a documentary. And last but not least, well, it is least, it's last, but anyway, we have Milton Jones House of Rooms, which is on every Friday at Channel 4 at 10:30. Milton and his mother live together in a big old house, renting out their spare rooms to a variety of tenants, including Alice, played by Cordelia Bugeja, or how you pronounce it, a shy, tongue-tied girl who can't quite communicate with Milton, who's equally awkward in her presence. When new tenant Paul arrives, he seems to hit it off with Alice right away, forcing Milton to up his game and try and compete for her attention. And we had Susie Blake as a mother. I can't remember the names of the other people who were in it, but it did have some nice touches from the start, even from the start, where the caption "Episode 1 Paul" appeared in front of the house by the bin bags, and when the refuse collector came along, he picked up both the bags and the caption at the same time. Then we had Milton, who got some junk mail through the door and then posted back out the ones he didn't want. It looks better than it sounds, to be honest. Then enter Alice, but Milton's attempts to woo her were thwarted by the arrival of Paul, and then getting locked out as Paul sweet-talked Alice into dinner that night. Also, Milton held a residence meeting, offered some biscuits to Tony, who remarks that only the boring ones were left, and then Milton opens a top layer to reveal better ones below, and offer them to Alice, who tells him that it's bad luck to eat those without finishing off the top layer first. So he crams the remainder into his mouth and then is able to lift it up, revealing light shining out from the bottom layer like the suitcase in Pulp Fiction. At one point, his mother challenged him to a game of cards as well, saying the aim was to get rid of them all as quickly as possible. So he chucked them all out the window. Overall, I mean, I really enjoyed this. It's very bizarre, but it's good to have a bit of bizarre from time to time. It has quite a visual flair to it as well, along with some of Milton's fantastic puns being implemented into the script. So this is definitely one of the best things I saw all week. So yeah, I'd definitely recommend that. It's every Friday, 10:30 on Channel 4. Okay, so that's your TV reviews for this week. And in a moment, we'll have a look, well, a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at look ahead to what's coming up in the coming week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we have a look at look ahead to some programmes coming up in the coming week. Starting with Tall Hot Blonde on Channel 4, Wednesday at 10 o'clock. A Tall Hot Blonde is the true story of a beautiful teenage vixen who uses internet game rooms to lure men into a cyberspace web. When she discovers she's been double-crossed and lied to by one of her victims, she wants revenge and unleashes a fantasy online that escalates into real-life murder, all because of a girl no one ever met in person. Drawing exclusive access to internet messages, secret notes and letters, as well as police evidence files and exclusive prison interviews, Tall Hot Blonde delivers the details, the horrific results, of what can happen when people lie online. And it just sounds like, well, sounds pretty much what it sounds like. Sounds like it might be interesting, just so it's not one of these documentaries where you often get on Channel 4 where it's sort of interesting for about the first sort of half hour or so, and then it just starts repeating itself and gets a bit bleh. But we'll see anyway, see if it's any good. Also returning is Mad Dogs on Sky One on Thursday at 10 o'clock. Now, Max Beasley, Philip Glenister, John Sim and Mark Warren's Holiday from Hell has been extended in a must-see second series of the delectably dark original drama, it says here. The problem is that there's no plot that's been revealed for this so far, other than the fact that after Glenister killed the policewoman at the end of the first one and then jumped into the pool, which, I mean, that was the only duff part of a decent series, the other lads decide not to head home after all and return to help him out. And then more hijinks ensue. So, I mean, that's just, I mean, it was pretty, you know, that's a decent cast, so I just hope it all does come together and they just don't have a cop-out ending that makes no sense. But either way, excuse me, at least we now know that a third series has been commissioned. Also on this coming week, we've got Birdsong on Sunday at 9 o'clock on BBC One, which is, I mean, I've seen the trailers for this and it looks like it could be okay, but it's an epic love story set against the First World War. As Stephen Raisford fights in the terrifying Deathfield trenches of northern France, he's haunted by memories of Isabel Azer, the woman with whom he had an illicit and all-consuming affair during a summer in France before the war. Starring Eddie Romaine, Clemence Posey, Joseph Moll, Marie-Josée Cruz, Matthew Good and Laurent Lafitte, and probably other people I can't pronounce either. And that's all that's coming up for the next week. In a moment, we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have a little bit of TV news for you. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6, for the final section of today's show. Well, this week's show, even. Now, in this section, it's all about TV news, and starts off with the news that the Radio 4 Edinburgh Comedy Commissions have been announced. BBC Radio 4, the nation's leading station for comedy, has announced details of a range of commissions emanating from talent displayed at last year's Edinburgh Festival. The commissions are headed with a script commission for the Foster's Edinburgh Comedy Award winner Adam Riches and four separate pilots. There's John Peel's Shed, the previously announced programme is adapted from John Osborne's show of the same name, based on his book Radiohead, a previous Radio 4 book of the week. Osborne says, "After winning a box of records from John Peel's Shed in 2002, I always wanted more people to be able to listen to some of the tracks in the collection, to be able to talk about the records and about music, radio and John Peel to an enthusiastic Radio 4 audience is such a pleasure, and I hope people enjoy it in their living rooms, cars and baths even." And we also have the news that BBC One bosses have asked writer Jennifer Saunders for a full new series of a hit sitcom, Absolutely Fabulous. Executives at the BBC were rumoured earlier, you know, last week to be keen to secure further episodes of the popular sitcom, which satirises celebrity culture, fads and fashion trends after the success of the two specials over the Christmas period. The two new episodes, which broadcast on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, achieved audiences of 7.43 and 7.12 million viewers respectively, and were the first appearances made by the characters since the previous episode, White Box, in 2004, and a brief comic relief appearance in March 2005. The ratings and critical success of the episodes led bosses to ask Jennifer Saunders to write a further Christmas special for 2012, Heaven Help Us, and a full series which would air in 2013. on Tuesday, a couple of weeks ago now, I think this was, as BBC Insider was reported as saying, the viewing figures prove it's as popular as ever, and there's a real appetite for more episodes. Obviously, it's down to Jennifer to write more and get all the actors together, but well, that will take some organising. The two specials and a third Olympics-themed episode, due to be broadcast later this summer, were recorded in August last year to mark the 21st anniversary of the series. Originating as a sketch in an episode of the French and Saunders sketch show, it ran for three series and a two-part final special between 92 and 96, before being revived for two further series and a number of additional specials from 2001 to 2005. However, any new series could clash with plans to produce a film adaptation of the sitcom. Saunders has made it clear on her Twitter account that she is very keen to pursue the big screen project, and there have been rumours that it would be based around the French Riviera, whilst a new TV series and the film could not be physically produced at the same time. It's possible that the agreement for one could include a development deal for the other. Okay, well, that's everything for this week. What we'll do now is time to say goodbye. What I was going to say was you can check out all of the trailer links and gaming footage and everything from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And I'm going to end the show with a cracking tune from, I think it's probably like from the early 90s, something like that. It's by the Cranes, and it's called Tomorrow's Tears. It's not at all a happy song by any stretch of the imagination, but has quite an ethereal quality to it. And I love it, so I hope you love it too. So here we go. It's the Cranes and Tomorrow's Tears. This is 106.6.
106.6.